We're highly involved in supporting HIV-positive men and youth. When I say youth, I mean male and female youth. We also work a lot with youth in general, and also the elderly and vulnerable, and also single fathers with dependent children. But one of our big focuses is constantly working out how we run the organisation and constantly making sure that all the decisions and how we look towards the future is using the professional knowledge, how to make sure it's going to be sustainable, accountable, legal, in line with the government's vision for Kenya, but also really understanding the issues at hand by youth community representatives. So there's three founders, including myself. One is a guy called Farhan. He's a wealthy Kenyan. He's actually a Muslim. And he was running a small bus company, and that's how I got to know him. I caught a bus. And he had a wonderful vision to get all Kenyans to contribute a little bit to support those in need. And I also met another person called David. Now, he's from the slums. He's very, very poor. His family, his mother and father, his older sister have all died from AIDS. But he was doing the best he could with little. He was doing a community group, involved in some research as well. Mm. So the three of us, we got together and formed what is now Uplifting Men and Youth in Africa. But what we realised is the importance of having the steering committee, these 10 people, 5 from the community and 5 from the professional sector, so that those 10 people are the ones making decisions, while the three of us, the founders, we lead the vision and make sure that the organisation sticks to its objectives, uses the funds the best way possible.
So what difference is your organisation having on the bigger organisations such as World Vision and even the government?
Constantly talking with the larger organisations and getting advice from them about how they're working, or even partnerships and possible partnerships. But because we have people on the ground that really understand those issues at hand, mm. we're actually feeding back real information to them. So somebody like Dr. Catherine, who works for the African Population Health Research Centre, which is a large NGO that supplies a lot of the data and research for the big organisations and agencies. When we told her about, you know, the variance in the statistics from what we're hearing on the ground to her official statistics, she realised that they need to try new methods to capture that information. A very sad phenomenon we're sort of coming across, and that's why we're targeting youth regardless of their HIV status, is that youth, if they don't have HIV, because there's quite a few agencies that support men, support women and support children that are HIV positive. Now, the youth, maybe they finish primary school if they're lucky, and then they don't have much else to do. High school's too expensive, there's not enough opportunities there. Training, there's nothing, there's no jobs. So they get very bored and idle, and they get very poor. They can barely afford food and so on. Now, it gets to a stage where they really need support. Maybe they've got, you know, some sickness or a broken arm or a broken finger or something. Or maybe a youth gets pregnant. Well, these people can barely actually afford a meal a day for themselves, let alone when they're sick or even pregnant. So what do? They might not live for another week or for another month. So unfortunately, what some of them do is actually hire sex workers to actually infect them with HIV and go out and on purpose get HIV. Because these people in the slums, they're very aware of HIV and AIDS. They've been educated about it. But HIV and AIDS, if you treat it with the right medicine, you stay in your dosage and so on, you can live some good years ahead. But for somebody who's looking at maybe dying the next month or so from starvation or from a basic sickness that they have got no opportunity to support and no agencies there to support them, well, you know, if I was in their case, I'd choose the 5-year or the 10-year life sentence rather than the next month or so.
So you're now an official body. You've been approved, recognised as a non-government organisation. You've got your trial programs running. And so you decided to come home, where it all started for you, to see whether the people back here on the Limestone Coast can help you set up your organisation. So how can we help?
Well, indeed, visit our website. It's www.umay, that's U-M-A-Y, Africa. org. What we're actually trying to do over in Kenya at the moment is actually to purchase some land, about 2 acres, and that will cost probably about $25,000 to $30,000 Australian dollars to purchase that amount of land in the slum, and then build a complex on there, which will have a UMA centre, including rooms for counselling and so on, the psychosocial support that's so desperately needed in the slums, mm-hmm. but also a medical clinic, a primary school and a high school, and a community hall for youth groups and so on to operate in. So that's what we're really focusing on now, is actually raising funds for that, to really get the community some help that they desperately need. With our schools that we want to operate for the orphans and for the people that are very much desperately in need, we want to actually do some twinning with different schools here. And I spoke yesterday with a local primary school, and just talking to them about the difference of education and the different standards they have. The fact that we gave each kid in a school one pencil, one eraser, and six small A5 exercise books. That will last them about a term. Now, that's the only present these kids have had for a couple of years. It was their Christmas birthday combined, and they were so happy with it. It cost us $1.50 per kid.
Mm.
And, you know, when I was talking to the primary school here, the kids were so inspired by it. And so what we wanted to do, they asked, can we talk to them? Can we meet them? And so with the beauties of programs like Skype, we can set up for free video conferencing back and forth. So once we actually have our schools actually up and running properly, we want to be able to have, once a week, the classrooms over in Kenya will actually be involved in a twinning classroom exercise. So they might link up with a high school here in the southeast or a primary school here in the southeast,
yeah,
or one over in America or Canada or England. And so that once a week they're actually getting different experiences and being involved in a classroom exercise. It might be English, it might be maths or so on, but they're actually learning from teachers here in Australia. But vice versa, the communities that on the students that are going to these schools here in Australia or in England, America, they get to see what life is like over there and get to ask questions and be involved with them as well.